Welcome to Film Panic. This may be the first episode you're hearing. It may not be. We don't know yet. But my name is Tyler. I run Nerdstalgic, just a YouTube channel where I talk about popular culture and movies. And this is Shane. You Hello. Might know him as Retro Nemo. He's going to be your host for today, which sounds very American Idol-esque, and I did not mean it to come across like that. And Jordan, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and I'm introducing myself.
Okay, amazing, Jordan. That was very nice.
Thank you. I worked really hard writing that.
I'm excited. Okay, great. So, today it's me versus Jordan. But I do want to say really quickly, I'm in Orlando now, and I want to know, Jordan, would you go to Disney World right now with everything open? The date is what? No. What's the date? The date is May 27th.
Disney World. I wouldn't even go if it was December of this year and everything's all.
You wouldn't go?
Like, no.
Shane, would you go?
Well, okay, so. Full disclosure, I've never been to a Disney theme park. I've never really had a desire. But if you're in Orlando, I'd rather like risk my life.
How have you never had a desire to go to a Disney theme park? Have you been to Universal?
I'm very cynical. I'm very like, oh, because they pump out smells so that you like want to go in the shops. It just feels like capitalism to me.
I mean, it absolutely is, but it's magical capitalism.
in its purest form, it is.
Have you been to Universal?
I haven't been to either, but I do obsessively watch a lot of.
So basically,
of, like, Disneyland.
You never had a childhood.
I did not. No. Basically, I did YouTube since I was 6 years old, so I've just been.
Well, the reason I say this is because, like, so in Orlando, there's a lot of people that are really excited. So Disney Springs, which is like the shopping, it's like a shopping little area for Disney, opened up yesterday or the day before, and it was packed.
Oh, I bet.
Packed.
Yeah.
Like, no 6 feet apart, none of that. It was just people. There's a three-hour line to get into a store called World of Disney. A three-hour line to get into a store called World of Disney.
And you wanted to live near all this?
You would have to pay me to stand in line for 3 hours to go into a store. I would need reparation. I would need something.
You'd have to pay me to live in Florida with everything going on right now. And I still
wouldn't take
it.
It was better than living in Manhattan, though.
I mean, sure, reasons. But now, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, but three rights make a left.
Yeah, I mean, that was very poetic. That was very
eloquent. I learned it from cartoons.
Yeah. Okay, so, today we have a battle between me and Jordan, and it's going to be, what is the most underrated Marvel movie? So I just want to clear this up before I hand this over to Shane. I want to clear this up. I want to define underrated really quickly because I feel like that's important for a conversation like this. By underrated, we don't mean made the least money, which, by the way, I do think Ant-Man did. I'm pretty sure $527 million global has to be it. But anyways, I'm not starting my argument now. We don't mean who made the least amount of money or who has the lowest Metacritic aggregate. I think that's obviously Thor: The Dark World. what we mean by underrated is the movie within this canon, within the MCU, that people don't talk about or don't appreciate or don't respect as much as maybe we think they should. Do you guys think that's a fair definition?
I think it's
fair.
In terms of Marvel, underrated's hard to say in general, just because all of the movies are like insanely successful.
I know, insanely popular, but I think that's the right way. I agree with that. I think that's the right way to define it. So I guess I'm going to hand it over to Shane after me and Jordan. I think let's open what we're going to talk about. Today, Jordan, you're going to deal with me talking about Ant-Man for half an hour. I think it's easily, I don't even think it's a question. It's the most underrated Marvel movie. I think it was when we first decided to do this, it was incredibly easy for me to go look through that canon and just say, yeah, this is it, for a litany of reasons. But for me, like, I am a huge Ant-Man advocate. Like, I am the perfect person to have this conversation because I think Ant-Man is easily one of the most interesting Marvel movies, if not one of the more unique Marvel movies. It also has one of the most unique, I think, histories and backgrounds. This is a movie that started development in like 2003, but I'll get there. Now, Jordan, what do you got for us today?
I have only the most underrated, of course, Doctor Strange from 2016. It's a film about Doctor Strange. It's a film about Doctor Strange, how he joined the MCU, his story, how he became the strange doctor he is.
I think more interesting to me about Doctor Strange is that Marvel even had the balls to make that movie. That movie is so juxtaposed to like the flashy fantasy of Iron Man and Thor. But anyways, yeah.
I think it like opened up like an entirely different world in the Marvel universe. Like, I mean, like that really delved into like an entirely different like existing lore. We were used to seeing like all the same people and stuff, so I feel like Doctor Strange like opened up.
It certainly feels It certainly feels the most spectacular after seeing like Thor. I think is the closest we got to fantasy really before this. Like Guardians is sci-fi, but like Thor is the closest we got to fantasy, and I think Doctor Strange really was like there's a whole.
I think the better word you're looking for is mystical.
That's a good word to describe it. Anyway, Shane, lead us away. It's
all right, boys. Well, there have been a lot of Marvel movies. So those are good choices on each of your ends. I know. I did some research. There's like more than 5, I think, they made. Some crazy.
That's crazy.
At least 10. I don't know.
Wow, so, they're really going places.
Yeah, I have hope for them. Okay, Tyler, you're first up. Are you ready for your testimony?
I'm ready. Put 10 minutes on the clock. I'm good. I got
10 minutes on the clock. You got this. Starting now.
Okay, so I mean, as I already told you guys, I think it's without question Ant-Man, and I think there's actually a couple of elements that make Ant-Man more unique than most Marvel movies, which I think people don't appreciate enough. The first is Scott Lang in general. I think he's the most grounded and normal hero in the MCU, without question. Scott Lang is, outside of Spider-Man, the only real human being that feels any bit of relatable, in my opinion. Sure, you could make an argument for Anthony Mackie's Falcon, but unlike Falcon, Scott Lang is genuinely well-characterized, which is, I guess, a given, given that he's got 2 movies in which he's the title character. But unlike nearly every other MCU hero, Scott isn't, he's not really super in any way, right? I mean, he's Tony's a genius, a billionaire, playboy, philanthropist, as he puts it, but Scott has nothing. He's reasonably intelligent, but broke, strong enough, but unremarkable in strength. He has to learn, in the most mundane and practical ways imaginable, how to be a hero. This isn't his suit, he didn't build it, nor does he particularly understand it. Which makes him, I think, incredibly relatable. I mean, he's as surprised, confused, and baffled by what's happening throughout the movie as we would be, which, according to Peyton Reed, the director, was kind of the point, obviously. It makes him charming, easy to like. He's a normal person, for once, that you can imagine existing in the world that we live in, you know, without the suit. I think he's also, like, unlike every other Marvel hero, not necessarily the best of guys, which I think is really unique for a Marvel movie, and I think ground that hasn't been treaded before. He's a criminal. He's a career criminal whose job in the movie is, by the way, to commit a crime and steal something. He exists in this little humorous, moral gray Robin Hood area, and while Robin Hood isn't all too unique to film that character archetype, applying this characterization in the context of a giant green dude or a guy who builds robots that can blow up a small city and a recently frozen super serum injected patriot is genuinely refreshing. He's really just a guy battling with his own moral compass, like we all do. And as Peyton Reed said in his interview with Flicks in the City, which I read a couple days ago, Paul Rudd was built as the viewer's normal person, eyes and ears for this movie. He's, like I said, he's going through this as he thinks we would. And it helps that Paul Rudd is charming as all hell and perfectly cast. But I think most importantly, in this movie, a lot of MCU movies are unable to ground themselves because of how they motivate their characters. Scott is reasonably motivated. He really just wants one simple thing, and that's to see his daughter, and maybe become a better man along the way after his trip to Baskin-Robbins, and I think that's as far as his motivations extend, which is unique. And even Hank Pym, who is operating in this nice little gray area of mentorship, Pym is admittedly just using Scott. He's aware of it, and throughout the movie, he struggles with it. I mean, every one of these archetypes is played nicely, I think, through motivation. They're grounded in that motivation. I think it helps that while Edgar Wright was on the project, he did, by the way, ask Marvel not to put Ant-Man in any other movie like The Avengers. So we get a real chance to very organically discover his origin story. You know, I don't think Scott's maybe the best Marvel hero. It's just that he may be one of the more unique ones. And I think unique is a key to kind of a second element there, which is genre. I think a lot of people have noted this, right, about the first person, but what Marvel quickly began to realize as they were doing these movies is that they needed a dichotomy or structure within the MCU, or dichotomy of structure within the MCU. So they kind of started playing with genre very early on. Like, besides Winter Soldier, though, I think Ant-Man does this better than really any other film in the MCU. Ant-Man really isn't a superhero movie. I think we can all agree on that. It's just a heist movie. It has substantially more in common with, like, Ocean's 11 than it does Captain America. And then you look at it, okay, let's examine it as a heist movie. Is it a good heist movie? Well, let's take the structure of a heist movie. You meet your thief and establish motivation. Happens to Ant-Man, check. Articulate what's being stolen and from where, check. Demonstrate the obstacles in the way, check. Build a team and establish the big baddie, check. And execute the heist, check.
So
and
is this the argument is, that it's unique to a heist film, or is it unique to
so both,
the MCU
both.
In general? Because
both.
It's still
I think
just a heist
genre.
It's you know, I mean, it's still just a heist film at the end of the day with, you know,
it is,
shrinking
but
abilities.
Within the canon of Marvel, it's unique in that way, right? It plays with genre well. But that's important. It plays with genre well. This could make for a relatively uninspired film, right? It could be just another heist movie, given that it follows that structure kind of to a T, like you say. But when you have a script written and then rewritten by names like Edward Wright, Paul Rudd, and Adam McKay, you do get something a bit more idiosyncratic, I think. I think maybe what's worth digging into a bit deeper here is that Edgar Wright, which is, as you guys know, the guy behind Baby Driver, the Cornetto trilogy, Scott Pilgrim, had been working on this film for nearly a decade. He pitched it to Marvel in 03. He casted it, he wrote it, and his influence is clear throughout. He left the project in 2014, and a lot of that vision was revised, but most of the bones outside of character changes apparently remained intact, and you can see that, and there's that elevation. How many heist movies have you seen that involve a supersuit? And better yet, like you say, okay, it's just a heist movie with a supersuit. Most importantly, I think Ant-Man is far funnier, thanks again to Wright and his influence and the rewriting team of Rudd and McKay, than most, if not every heist film I've ever seen. Which
okay, you
really
got, you
is
got
5 minutes
left. I just want to let you know.
Which it really is the movie's special sauce. I think Rudd and Peña, in particular, elevate the hell out of this very recognizable formula. And you're right, Jordan, it is a recognizable structure. But I genuinely believe that the comedy and the action really elevate it beyond what you get in a typical heist film. I think it's okay for a film to subscribe to a structure we've seen before as long as it elevates that structure in meaningful ways. And I think in comedy, in writing, and in action, it does that. Peña is really well characterized as well, by the way, even in subtlety. There's a moment early in the film where Peña's character mentions that he was the only one to knock out the big man in prison, that the film opens with Scott Lang fighting. And it makes his knockout of the guard in the heist consistent with that, and also funny. So it's adding to the character, and I think that's done well throughout the movie. But you're not wrong. I think another way that it elevates itself, I think another way that it's unique, and I think another thing that people don't appreciate is that it is, you know, maybe the most tonally consistent Marvel movie. Jordan, I think you can agree, outside of pacing, is tone not something that films have to nail?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you have sporadic tone, remember watching Scoob, right? What was the biggest problem with Scoob?
It didn't have any consistency.
Tone. There was none. There was no tonal consistency at all. And I think you can say that about a lot of bad movies. I think Sonic isn't a terrible movie, but wouldn't you agree that it was the same issue there?
Yes.
Exactly. And I think Ant-Man nails that. I think you can see tonal inconsistency in Thor the Dark World, too. I mean, what do you dislike about Thor the Dark World?
I think the villain's weak.
I think the villain's weak, too. But
there's not a lot of purpose to the story. The grand scope of the story in that film doesn't seem to have the importance needed.
And wouldn't you agree the movie kind of flies all over the place with what kind of movie it wants to be?
3 minutes on the clock.
Cool. Well, I think that's kind of the key to Ant-Man, right? It knows what it is. It knows its audience, and it never really
But I also
wavers.
Think a lot of other MCU movies have
I
great
agree.
Tone. I don't think it's exclusive to Ant-Man being the one of
It's
only
not exclusive
tone.
To Ant-Man. But remember, like, that's not the best argument here, right? Because we're talking about what makes Ant-Man special. And I do think the tonal consistency in the face of a structure that already exists that could be cliche, it works. Again, something that Thor 2, I think, got wrong in particular is tonal consistency. That movie had no idea what it was, what it wanted to be.
I think that film has a lot more problems than just tonal consistency.
Agreed. Was it tragic, scary, funny, fantasy? It tried way too hard to do way too much. Ant-Man, through and through, is a comedy. One that never, even for a moment, takes itself too seriously, which says a lot, given that a lot of Marvel movies feature incredibly misanthropic villains that shift tone while on screen quite a bit. And this isn't that. Darren Cross is really just an exaggerated, dark version of Pym. He's absurd. He shrinks sheep and turns people into melted jelly beans. The guy's not, you know, setting the world on fire in terms of villains. And from the moment that Scott gets asked, for example, for a burger in Baskin-Robbins, to the moment that the ant bite stops Cross from killing Scott, the movie never strays too far from that happy comedy route. And I think this is something that far too many people forget to talk about when it comes to the Marvel movies in particular. I think tonal consistency is something a lot of Marvel movies struggle with, or at least appropriate shifts in tone. And I think they're just as important as something like pacing is. Ant-Man starts what you think is going to be, this is a good example, I guess. in the briefcase in the helicopter, there's this moment where there's a needle drop, and there's this glorious gladiatorial battle that's about to start in the third act, marking what you think is going to be a real shift in that tone to this Earth's Mightiest Hero moment. And instead, that needle drop moment hits, the music starts, the fight begins, and then the briefcase just plops gently into a pool next to two kids playing ping pong. I mean, I think this movie could have been generic, honestly. I think it has the bones of something that could have been generic if the humor didn't hit, if it was miscast, if it tried to do too much. And it's not that. And I think this follows through in the action. I think a lot of people's complaints is that is it even reasonable to ask somebody to direct a good movie about ants, and that's not what happens here. And I mostly disagree. I think that the action in this movie is creative. It's well written. I think Edgar Wright's final scene on the train tracks, which is a leftover from his version of the script, is incredibly ingenious. It's indicative of his creativity. And I think that creativity extends throughout the movie. I think some of the fight sequences here, the briefcase, the end scene with Thomas Trank Tank Engine, even Scott's montage are some of the most unique moments in Marvel movies. Marvel movies that do relatively the same things, right? They have that big final battle. But in this case, he's all battling right, 10 minutes is up. Wasp on a train. I guess to round it out, that what we really have here is that, you know, while it's not as visually arresting as Doctor Strange, or maybe as grand in scope as something like Guardians of the Galaxy, watching Ant-Man in theaters, even the moments like the subatomic moments are pretty striking, and they maintain that identity of humor and creativity from action to writing to scripting to acting all the way through. And I think that's something that people maybe miss sometimes when talking about Ant-Man. All right. I went a little bit over, but that's okay. I'll let you go.
Maybe you should do like Ant-Man and shrink your argument just a little bit there.
I'll have to call it there. But no, those were some really great points.
I hope so. I mean, I don't know. We can talk about it in encounters, Jordan. Shane, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jordan. Cross-examine, buddy. What you got?
So I think while you're, you know, I think when you brought up a lot of stuff about the tone, obviously, I think tone is not mutually exclusive to Ant-Man. But I agree, when tone is done right, it should be, you know, recognized in a film. And I think that's something that my film nails very well, because they're very consistent with the tone that they try to portray in Doctor Strange. And I'll get to that in my argument. But for you to say that Ant-Man is the most underrated MCU film, I think is an incorrect statement. I think that a film that gets a sequel, and not only the sequel, is used as a big marketing tool between two of the biggest films of all time, I don't think.
But we're not talking about the sequel. Film.
I know, but Doctor Strange doesn't have a sequel. There's no sequel for that.
Doctor Strange is getting a sequel, though.
It's getting a sequel, but they didn't immediately go into getting that film out there.
Here's a good example. How many times have you heard people talk about, like, just little things? Damn it. How creative. Take the first wide shot in the bathtub, establishing perspective and size for Scott.
I think those special effects aren't great. I don't think they hold up.
I disagree with that, but what I will say is I think a lot of the question about Ant-Man comes down to how it's directed. And if you take like a wide shot like that, right, this is a movie about a guy that shrinks in size. And Peyton Reed and the scripting team manages to find horror in the mundane immediately, like the bathtub. It becomes a big part of the movie's intrigue, right? Like that creativity, you don't see. Scott is a regular guy, right? And I think, yes, the sequel can be considered
this. But we've had so many films where a regular guy stumbles onto something mystical, magical, special, different. Almost every main character of every film that's not an MCU film is just an average guy, and then something happens.
I disagree with
that entirely. This extraordinary adventure.
There's almost zero average guys in the MCU. Tony Stark.
I said just in general in film. I didn't say just the MCU.
Sure, but how many of those movies are great? Right, like
fair bit of
first
them.
Off, I don't
I'm
know.
Saying, a lot of films just have an average guy in there, an average Joe
stumbling across
happy
an
go lucky.
I mean, if you look,
obviously
at,
not
again,
an Ant-Man suit,
but it's
that's
about using.
It too literal.
It's about, but no, it's not though, right? It's about using what they stumble. So whatever it is they stumble upon, right? It's about using that creatively, right?
Right. That's the vessel to use it creatively, and that's been used in other films before. It's not just exclusive to Ant-Man. It's the only time, maybe in the MCU specifically.
But that's what we're talking about, right?
Right, but when you're trying to bring up points like, oh, it's this big and wonderful thing, Ant-Man, sure, it's a different genre, but it's nothing. It's nothing revolutionary here. It's nothing that's.
But that argument doesn't hold any water. Something being revolutionary does not make it great. You don't need to be revolutionary to do something well. Nothing Edgar Wright has ever done is revolutionary. Right, he's done some cool things with editing and script, but he's not, like, I don't know, Luca Guadagnino didn't do anything revolutionary with Call Me By Your Name. That doesn't make it any less of a film, right? Like, something doesn't need to be groundbreaking to be good.
And I'm not saying that. I was just saying in the context of finding something special that does something special for that person as the vessel for creativity.
Right, but it's about what does it do special for this movie, right? Like... Again, Ant-Man could have been...
It shrinks a guy, and then later stories, it grows him.
Sure, but by that logic, that's all right, special. Well, Tony's just a dude that gets in some metal. And Doctor Strange is just some dude that finds some magic.
Well, like, not really.
Yeah.
He earned that magic. He trained. He practiced. He learned.
So did Ant-Man.
No, he got in the suit and went, and he stumbled through training.
He didn't just get in the suit. He didn't just get in the suit, right? He was a career criminal
He's still not a master of that suit. He still fails if he uses it. And that's the problem.
Thank you. That's not the problem. That's the great thing about this movie. None of these people should be masters of the things they're getting by the end of the film. They shouldn't be. They're supposed to be regular people.
My argument was based off of like just some guy. Sure. Go ahead.
Tony's mastery of the Iron Man. That's one of my big problems with Iron Man 1 is how is Obadiah staying in this suit fighting like he's been doing it for 10 years at the end of that movie? It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, that's the beauty of Ant-Man, right? Is if we and you found this suit, we wouldn't be masters of the suit by the end of it. We barely know how to use it, and neither does he. And I think that's the difference between this and other MCU movies is Tony hops in the suit, and by the end of the movie, first off, I'm not disparaging Iron Man. Iron Man is excellent. But by the end of the movie, he is suddenly this master fighter. Doctor Strange is the same way. He has mastered this thing that people spend years and years and years and years, decades
and
training.
He's also established as a fast learner and a smart person.
Right, exactly. He's suddenly the best. Exactly.
He's not the best. The ancient one is always the best.
He suddenly manages to save the world. Scott Lang
doesn't
save the
world. That's 5 minutes.
Okay.
I just want to add on that. To a copycat villain point, that your film still struggles with one of the biggest things in the problems of the MCU films is that it's the same
villain.
Yep. It's a copycat villain of the main character.
Yep. 100%.
And I don't think that ending sequence of them fighting is anything too crazy. It's just two people who can shrink and grow things fighting each other. Same power.
I disagree. I think that it is not just funny, but it manages to maintain the identity. That's a really hard thing about an MCU film, right? Is how do you maintain the identity of your movie into the action? And when things start exploding and when things go awry, and I think that fight is not just humorous, but it maintains that creativity. You know, one of the early moments of tension is when Ant-Man is trying to make his way through a nightclub the size of an ant or get through from a vacuum cleaner. I mean, take the car chase in this movie. It's not a car chase at all. He's flying on an ant just trying to make it to his destination. Like, it flips things that we have seen before, and I think that's what Ant-Man does well, is it takes kind of genre.
I think it just adds expected humor.
I mean,
it's expected humor. Oh, he's small, so let's make a small joke.
I think that's not giving Paul Rudd, Adam McKay, or Edgar Wright quite enough credit here. I think
Maybe they should have wrote it better.
Well, I mean, that's fair. The only problem I really
see
with this
person's small. Let's make a small joke. Oh, well, wow. I'm hanging out with ants. Let's make a joke that the ants
are
really
fair,
but really slow.
But we have to establish. This is a movie about a guy named Ant-Man that turns into the size of an ant, right? So if you're not making a joke about how he's small, you're certainly not going to make one about how big he is.
Why? He gets big in other films.
He can grow big, but
in this movie, he makes small things grow big. He makes an ant grow big. He makes the Thomas the train go big. And then they're like, wow, the joke is that there's a giant ant running in the city now. And then,
it's worth pointing out, there's a giant train out of my window. I guess it's worth pointing out that you could say that about any piece of humor in any movie. Humor is subjective, right? We could pick apart humor all day, but humor is subjective.
It'd be nice to have a little bit more clever writing than, expected humor.
Well, what would be a more clever joke then? About a large ant.
I don't know. I'm not the writer.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut you guys off because that's it for the cross-examination. But Jordan, since you love Doctor Strange so much, it's time for your testimony. 10 minutes on the clock. Let's defend your movie.
All right. So let's talk about good old Doctor Strange. All right. A film that is the most underrated film in the MCU. Not just because it doesn't have its sequel yet, right? Not just because it's a standalone film. But
it is getting its sequel. It's worth pointing out.
Yes, it is. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it is getting its sequel eventually. I think it got pushed back, but whatever. Regardless, this character is not only doesn't only have an underrated film, but he's also he's an important character to the MCU who didn't a lot enough people didn't have eyes on the how he got there, and he's just this sorcerer supreme. He's just this all being magical, mystical character that you discredit as, oh, he just learned it all and now he's this. When the film itself establishes after, well, even from the beginning, he's a cocky guy who's really good at what he does. He studies and he can really fastly learn a lot of different things. And
he's an exceptional human being.
Right. He is the mind of like Tony Stark. He's Tony Stark
right.
in a different sense. He's just pompous and kind of a jerk. More than in cocky, more than the suaveness of
which objection number one. We don't have to spend too much time on it, but I will say that that I think is a flaw with Doctor Strange's character, that he is way too much like Tony throughout the first act of that movie. But continue.
I think Tony's too much like him. I think it's just how the it's just how the characters are. But it is what it is. Sure, that's a fair argument. But regardless, after the accident, which you know cripples his hands from being used, which are his tools, right? That's the big thing, is his hands is how he's able to perform the surgeries and save lives and do the things that the other surgeons can't do, because he's very good at what he does and he's very meticulous at how he performs things. And through this and him trying to deal with his emotions of not being able to be the best and not getting the recognition and losing everything that made him who he thought he was, he seeks out the help to not only heal his hands but to come back better than ever, and through someone who he knows who's in an accident who is just miraculously healed, explains about this certain kind of technique that he learned over in Nepal that you know allowed him to learn how to heal and become better, and didn't really kind of explain too much about it, but like kind of loosely hinted at it. And you know, his journey brought him over there, and he sought out the Ancient One. The Ancient One is someone who opens his mind and expands him to the greater world that is not just our world but our mirror world, our other realities, all the stuff that's going on at once.
Let's point out that Doctor Strange's motivation in this movie is once again selfish. Just like right. Tony's,
just like Ant-Man, same selfish.
I disagree. Ant-Man,
why he's selfish?
See his,
he wants
daughter.
He's selfish
he
because
be,
he wants to
he
see his
be
daughter.
Rich.
No, he's selfish because he wants to see his daughter and he wants life. He wants money, all this stuff. So he wants to steal the suit.
But that's he wants daughter to see his. He wants
but
money.
But
he's
see doing
his
a
daughter.
Selfish need I instead think, of getting instead of trying to continue to look for jobs. He goes on a high.
I don't mean that.
For
I more
reasons.
Mean you're right. You're right. I more mean that his motivation is
anyone's motivation is going to be towards them because they're the main character.
It's not towards them. Stars. It's the morality of the motivation. Right. Doctor Strange's motivation is not nearly as relatable as the.
If
motivation.
You want to argue morality. Him seeking out getting these hands done, you know, getting his hands fixed and learning all
so
this
stuff.
So he
can be rich.
Takes him in two
again.
Ways. No. No. Okay, but how is he rich?
And the best.
Because he was
he
saving people's
be...
life. He was saving
yeah,
people's
that,
lives
he,
and doing
yeah,
it in ways
not...
that no one else could do.
Right, but that's not.
He
that's
was the
not,
top doctor. The, he was the
right,
guy.
But that's part of
so
my
without
problem
those
with that
hands,
movie.
No one. Can
but that's
do
part
stuff
of my problem
like
with the movie is that the first act of the movie doesn't set up that he gives a huge amount of care about his patients. What he seems to care about through the first act of the movie is being the guy, the interviews, the magazine covers, the parties, the cars.
But it doesn't take away from the fact that he's still doing it. And on the other side of it, of him not going back and saving lives, he's saving lives as the Sorcerer Supreme. So with him not doing this, then he's just wallowing in his sadness with his hands that don't work and then him complaining about it. This way he's either going to get his hands fixed and the you know worst case scenario he's going back to saving people in the hospital. Best case scenario he's now defending our world from other dimensional threats. So either way the outcome
I guess.
Whatever selfish way you want to you know spin it it's all
that, again that was the
but
wrong
he's still,
word. I didn't,
he's still
well,
he's still saving people. Just like
well, I don't think anybody
know,
would
Ant-Man,
argue wanting to see your. I don't think anybody
Ant-Man's
would argue wanting to see your daughter.
When he steals the suit, when he goes into the house, he wasn't thinking, "Man, I'm going to become I'm going to use this suit for good one day." He doesn't think
no,
that.
But,
he's wanting
no,
to make some
thinks,
money. He wanted to steal
but
something.
But why does he want to make the money? That's what you're missing. Like Doctor.
Why does Doctor Strange want his hands back?
So he can be
people.
Rich again.
By doing what?
Be,
5 minutes.
So
left.
He can be the guy.
By doing what?
So
how does he make that money? Does he make that money just by existing?
So let's extend that logic. Let's extend that logic, right? Let's say that Scott Lang really wants to see his daughter, but along the way, his ulterior goal is to, take over a city state using force. Does that make him is that supposed to endear me to him? No, right. Let's extend the logic of even if his job is to save people, does that excuse him from being a dick?
Does that excuse Ant-Man from being a thief?
No, but I think a thief is a very normal thing to be in this world.
a thief over just being a prick? I'd rather someone be a prick than a thief.
Sure, but you're forgetting that Scott Lang's thievery was the Robin Hood kind of thievery. It was.
It doesn't matter. Stealing is stealing. See, we can keep going the morale route. Sure, he's being selfish, getting his hands fixed, but he's still either going to do it to save people's lives on either side of the way it goes. If he became sorcerer,
but it's not about just morale. You're missing the point. I'm not arguing about
Doctor
Strange's morale. Because
you're basing off
morale
because it's for his daughter, and he's doing
You're missing the point. You're missing my point. My point is that Doctor Strange is not a normal dude that you would meet out in the world. He's not this guy that you can imagine existing in this world.
Sure, but movies don't need to always have the guy.
They don't.
Like, oh, well,
he's the
quirky, relatable guy that
you have to just fall in love with. Sometimes you have to follow someone
who's kind of a prick, and then by the end of the movie, you may understand them and they may
but
have changed their
tune.
But that's
my point. That has to be done well. That's my
and
point.
I think
and
Doctor
I don't
Strange
think the first act
well.
Of Doctor Strange. I don't think the first act of Doctor Strange endears me at all.
I think it works. He's still even when the truth and facts are presented to him, or by the time he gets there, he's still non-believing. He's still not fully trusting. He's still
and
a
I
dick.
Still feel
he's
like
still
the writers
rude.
Of the
he's
movie
still...
went. I guess what I'm trying to say to you, Jordan, is I'm not arguing about morality, right? There are plenty of immoral characters in great films that we follow. I mean, look at things like Scorsese films, right? We still are endeared to them. All I'm saying is it's not a question of who's the better person. I don't care about that. What I do care about is if you're going to present a character who, and Doctor Strange is a guy that he is who he is in the movie, right? It's not like they're veering too far away from the comics. My point is that if you're going to present a character like that, I shouldn't feel for the first 30 minutes of your movie like you watched too much Iron Man and decided to write your script afterwards. There are better ways. I think that they could have done a better job of differentiating.
He ends up in a different place. His character
Agreed.
Grows and changes. Ant-Man's character does not. At the beginning of the movie, he's a charismatic thief, and at the end of the film, he's a charismatic thief with shrinking powers.
That is not true. You know that's not
that
true.
That is 100% true.
He has a much better respect for the people around him at the end of that movie. He cares altruistically about other people by the end of that movie in a way that we didn't see him care about at the beginning of the film. And I think most importantly, he understands what it means to do the right thing, right? He understands at least better, I think, what it means to use his abilities or what they are for good, not just being a petty thief anymore, right? But anyways, Jordan, you keep going.
1 minute left.
By the end of Ant-Man, it's just still Scott Lang. He did a heist. He's still a charismatic thief by the end of it. His character didn't grow. He didn't turn anything. The only growth he did was that, oh, cool. He did something that he thought was fun with some friends, and he got to see his daughter, and very cool. The ending for Doctor Strange is he goes, and he literally, by the end of the film, completely throws what an MCU film or any kind of film is and how an ending should be. There is no big final boss battle. It's smarts that outwit it. It scenes you never see. You see the reverse destruction of a city while time's moving in many different directions. One of the main bad guys is literally one of those, hey, look at me, but it really isn't what you think it is, because both that person and the Ancient One are both taking power from the dark, I'm trying to remember the exact name of the dimension, but the dark dimension or whatever it's from Dormammu. And when he goes into the Beam of the Sky to fight Dormammu, the only way that he wins is by a time loop and by outsmarting him. He uses his smarts in the magic rather than fighting and resolving to that. It's the most unique third act of a film in the MCU. There's no other MCU film that has a better third act. The visuals in this are incredible.
All right, that's 10 minutes.
There's no better third act. I'm going to go over just a quick second here because fine. I think that's fair on my end. I'm going to say the visuals in this film add to the realism of the world. This is the best special effects in the entire MCU. There is no film that looks better than this film. They painstakingly made everything look incredible as they could. And during the daytime, which is something you don't see with a lot of special effects, they try to mask it either with certain lighting or from certain angles. This film says, look, it's bright in daytime. Here's the special effects, and it all looks fantastic. The big fight scene in the city with it all moving around like it's Inception. is one of the best scenes in the entire MCU's history, and there's nothing that can match that in terms of intensity, action, and just value for what
they put on the screen. I think the end of Endgame has something to argue with.
No, I think the end of Endgame is incredible, but it visually does not compare to it because I can see the CGI.
I agree with that.
Throughout all of that fight scene. There's little realism to me. I mean, well, it's fine. It looks beautiful.
I did is worth pointing out that at the end of Doctor Strange, he ends up in space, which is not exactly a believable place to be either. I think you can see
that's only for the time loop sequence. Everything else, there's the whole nighttime city fight leading up to that, and then the whole daytime. Everything else is in the daytime before that.
All right, gentlemen, this is great discourse, which is perfect because it's time for Jordan's cross examination. So 5 minutes on the clock. Go ahead.
Come on, examine beautiful. Me.
Yeah, I mean, I like Doctor Strange. I mean, I want to be clear about that. I think Doctor Strange is a very good movie. I will say that I think Doctor Strange, part of the reason I don't think it's one of the most underrated, or I don't think it's the most underrated movie, is that people constantly come back to Doctor Strange about its visuals, right? They come back and they say, this was an amazing, this is the most visually intense, or the most visually interesting Marvel movie. I mean, it has a claim to fame that I think is pretty articulate. I think it's clear. I think that people recognize that. But what I will say is part of my problem with Doctor Strange, and I think this movie is a great movie nonetheless, but I think part of the problem with it is that it does have a hard, it does, and this is part of the problem with magic in general, I think, is it is hard to establish strength in that movie. Like, for example, like in Ant-Man, I think there's an incredible scene where, not incredible because it's crazy, but incredible for what it does for the film. When he goes, that late edition of the Falcon fight, which is one of the script's later editions, Marvel wanted some sort of Avengers moment in the movie, and Peyton Reed and Kevin Feige loved Mackie as Falcon. This served as a substantially more interesting idea than, oh, look, just the Avengers facility. This moment established Scott Lang's menace and power as a fighter in the suit. We see him take on and get away from an Avenger. We understand his strength next to another super character. We get perspective. So
but the like fight a scenes. B-tier but
wait,
Avenger.
Wait. But right. Of course. I mean, I think that's part of the funny.
It's not like he fought Tony Stark right away.
No, but that's exactly the point, right? If he fought Tony Stark, there's no way he should win, right? But he fought a B-tier Avenger.
Yeah, and he didn't win against the B-tier Avenger. He just outwitted.
Exactly,
him.
And that establishes him as a fighter. That's establishes his strength.
Doctor Strange outwits everyone in the film.
Wait. It establishes another. It's his strength and super grip. So we get perspective. So the fight scenes at the end of the movie have some precedent. We know and believe that Scott has a fighting chance because his strength has been comedically, albeit, established. I think with Doctor Strange, so much of the movie, and this is actually a strength of Doctor Strange, I genuinely believe this, so much of the movie is much more focused on the psyche of Strange. I think that's a great thing, by the way. I think that is what makes this part of this, what makes that movie kind of exceptional. It almost at times feels like they want to play into a character study of grief and depression, and what that means for somebody, what desperation means for somebody. And I will say that along the way, I don't know if the movie does enough for me personally to establish that Doctor Strange should be able to destroy planet-eating monsters. I just don't know that we see that enough
throughout the film. The film shows it. The time period from him getting mm-hmm. waking up from the car accident out of the coma till the point where he is fighting Dormammu is a long time.
Oh, it's a long time. I just don't know if it ever establishes that he has the power to destroy that.
And training and training and learning and doing all this stuff for quite a long time in the sorcerers.
But you know what I mean?
Whatever they were.
Like, can you give me an example? I know, but can you give me an example of a moment where throughout the film where Doctor Strange makes it clear, where the film articulates Doctor Strange can defeat a world-eating Dormammu? One moment, just one fight, something.
But he didn't. The thing is, he didn't have to. He used his smarts. He didn't fight Dormammu. He used his smarts
to fight him. He didn't fight he basically
learned how to fight. He learned how to use his hands and fight when he was training, right? He learned. So then there is hand-to-hand combat, which is great.
Right. He manages to destroy a city. At what point do we see that he is powerful enough to handle that?
The film establishes, as soon as he gets his hands on the stone and can, the eye of Agamotto, and can start manipulating time, and all the stuff he's learning from the forbidden books, and then all the stuff that he was taking from the library and learning.
I know there's a montage. I know the film tries to articulate it. I'm just saying that I don't think it does it very well.
It does it well. It's someone who is studying, who has been established to be a fast learner, who knows what they're talking about, has the top ranking person in one of the fields that he's in. Of
sure,
course,
but
he can
how
learn
believable
to do this stuff because
is
he's using
that
his hands.
That this surgeon,
how believable is it, is that someone can
magic.
Shrink and then can pull off this heist, some dope off the street, can get
he's
the
not
suit,
some dope off the street. That's the point of the, that's the point of, no, it's not. That's the point of the sequence in which
he's a petty thief, petty heister.
No, it's he's not. That they make it first off, the heist he commits in the movie that lands him in prison was a huge corporate heist. Number one. Number two, it's established that he is a master technician and a master electrician, and it shows that in the sequence where he steals a suit to begin with. He manages to take down an incredibly difficult vault like it's nothing. We have establishment of Scott's ability.
Okay, and same thing. We have an establishment. All right, but you see, you're trying to equate the fact of
I'm talking about fighting
to a world-ending creature, which he didn't even fight. He used his smarts. He used a time.
I'm not talking about
just
Dormammu. I'm talking about everything in that third act that leads up to
Dormammu. He learns how to fight. Like, what do you mean? He learns how to fight throughout the movie.
Jordan, I'm not questioning whether or not he learns how to fight. What I'm questioning, what I'm questioning is whether or not the film articulates it well. Anybody can do a montage where the
dude learns how to fight. I think it articulates it quite fine.
How? Give me one example.
The whole film shows
this. No, not the whole film. Give me one scene where we see that Doctor Strange is capable of taking down a city with his hands.
Are you that's not even a fair debate question.
It is. I can point out particular scenes in Ant-Man.
There is no equivalent for Ant-Man to appeal. Oh, now can he just take down a city?
Because
he doesn't take down
movie.
A city. But Doctor Strange doesn't take down a city.
No. You're not understanding. I'm not equating the two villains. You have to
He's
take
not the one manipulating
take
the world
both
in
of
that
these,
scene.
No. You have to take what these two people are dealing with for what they're dealing with in their own movies. We see moments where Ant-Man, it's well articulated what he can and cannot do.
Yes, and characters like Ancient One and Mordo have shown these powers. And when it comes to the big city scene when everything's moving, those are the ones doing it. The person
sure.
who starts doing it is
and
Mordo.
And what is Doctor
the person
Strange
who continues
doing
it
during
is
that
Ancient
time?
One. He is running and fighting against the main
exactly.
villain at the
when
time, Killius.
All we've seen in that movie, we've seen a Karate Kid montage where he sits in a dojo and fights somebody a couple of times in the movie.
But he's I don't understand. He's never doing it. He's not the one manipulating the city until the end when he's reversing time. And then that's
then,
how he fights the end. That's how he wins in the end by the time loop. There's
that
nothing in
his
film that suggests
film,
that he needs to do that.
A film's job, in my opinion, is to, especially an action film, is to make sure that you're establishing strength, establishing presence, establishing whatever amount of dominance that a character has before you lead them into a moment where they have to use that. And what I am saying is that I don't think one of Doctor Strange's biggest flaws is that while it's one of its biggest strengths is that it focuses very heavily on Doctor Strange's psyche, I think in return, one of the downsides of that is it doesn't spend enough time focusing or giving Doctor Strange enough conflict for me to believe that this man who
but
was
he's,
a surgeon
not,
a couple years ago.
The thing is, he's okay. Here's how I'll give you the example. He's not. If you're trying to, think,
it's not about whether or not he's fighting.
He's not,
it's not about whether or not he's punching
point.
Somebody.
Okay, I'm gonna have to sadly cut you guys off because
no,
it's
I have
panic.
To get this point out. Here. I got to get this point out right here.
Okay, yeah, sure.
When it comes to who he is in this character, in this entire film, and what they show mm-hmm. him to be, and what the other characters in this film and show them to be, Doctor Strange, even by the end of this film, isn't the strongest character. All right, he is not the one who is learning to manipulate the world. He's not the one who's learning how to do stuff. They show him learning and reading and understanding. When he's good with his hands, like he can in a surgeon, it's kind of like a movement of hands. That's how he learns how to do a lot of the, you know, pulling out the spells or making a circle to move
Agreed.
To another area. He learns how to do that stuff because he's good with his hands and he studies all this stuff. But when
Agreed.
It comes to the other characters are shown being more powerful. The Ancient One's the most powerful, but she dies in the film. All right,
correct.
Mordo, by the end of it, who turns evil, is the most powerful character left in the film by the end of it, which will be
Arguably.
His arch nemesis eventually.
Correct.
Because he will come back and he's going after other sorcerers
and
in the world.
Strange will
now.
Beat him too.
So, and that's how films, you expect Strange to lose at the end. No Doctor Strange 3. Of course he'll
We've
probably
seen
win
that.
At the end. But this will be his most. But by the time, at that point, Strange will already be seasoned. By the time we get Strange in the Avengers movies, he's seasoned. He's a lot more
Agreed.
In tuned with who he is, and he's a
Agreed.
Lot more powerful and smart. In this film, he's learning that, oh, his cape has his own personality. I can do this stuff with my hands. By the end of
Correct.
It, he just learned that, hey, I'm a smart person. I can use my smarts to do this because there's no other way of winning this. I'm not
Correct.
Strong enough as a fighter because I can't fight this ending world thing. I can't,
Correct.
You know, manipulate the city, so the other ones were doing that. They show that throughout the entire film. He is not the strongest in the film, and he was never meant to be. But
I don't agree. I think by the end of the film, we are supposed to believe that he is the Sorcerer
uh-uh.
Supreme.
No, he's
That's
not.
What he
not
is.
In that film. He doesn't become the Sorcerer Supreme until Avengers.
Okay,
well, I agree with that sentiment, but by the end of the movie, I think it's very clear that we're supposed to believe that's who he is.
No, when Mordo
These
walks away.
These are all great points. I do want to say, we're about to enter the panic time segment, which is basically you each have 2 minutes left to give your last remarks, and that's absolutely it. 2 minutes, no going over. Okay, Tyler, we're going to start with you. You got 2 minutes on the clock. Here's your final remarks. Go.
I think, in my opinion, I think that what Ant-Man does, not just for itself, but for the MCU, is again, create a wider dichotomy of the kinds of movies we're getting. While Doctor Strange is visually arresting at times, I think a lot of times Doctor Strange feels a lot like other movies outside of kind of the mysticism element in terms of character that we may have seen before. Whereas I think Scott Lang is one of the most relatable and interesting and most reasonably motivated characters in the MCU. I think that the movie plays with genre, especially the superhero genre, incredibly well. It creates this incredibly funny. It's a genre film. It's a heist movie. That's what it is, more so than it is even a superhero movie, which I think is also, by the way, what makes Captain America Winter Soldier so great, is that it is a spy espionage thriller. And I think this, albeit a different genre and a different tone, plays that well. But speaking of tone, I think, again, one of the things that makes Ant-Man so great is that it is so tonally consistent throughout this movie. You know what you're getting. They know who's watching it. Peyton Reed, Paul Rudd, Adam McKay, Edgar Wright, that this is a movie that feels like these people knew what they had and knew what they wanted to put on screen. And finally, it's something I didn't get a chance to talk about too much, is I think that the creativity that goes into some of the humor and that goes into really what they do with this suit, it carries throughout the film as well. I think that some of its action sequences, much like Doctor Strange, by the way, are some of the most interesting in the MCU. I agree that Doctor Strange's are as well, but I think Ant-Man's are partially the best because, again, they manage to maintain the identity of the film even in the moments where you're getting that superhero action that could take away from this kind of very idiosyncratic genre film. Sure, would I like to see Edgar Wright's version of this all the way through? All
right, that's 2 minutes.
Yeah, but this is what we got. Jordan, okay. You're up.
Great, last remarks. Okay, Jordan, are you ready?
Yep.
2 minutes on the clock. Go ahead.
Overall, I think Doctor Strange is the most underrated film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The fact they were able to pull off a movie like this after so many years of teasing if this could even be possible, if they could even make a film like this, if they could even pull off anything that happens like this, is a testament to the incredible work of Scott Derrickson, who comes from a very, you know, horror film background, and I think that adds to a lot of the trippy visual moments in this film and the impact they have. They're supposed to scare you. They're supposed to make you wonder. They're supposed to make you feel uneasy. You interpret, just like 2001 A Space Odyssey, you really interpret whatever the film is trying to explain or show you, that the world may not just be the small bubble you think it is. And I feel that it does not get the recognition it deserves, not only as a standalone enjoyable experience film, but as a big piece in a giant Marvel Cinematic Universe puzzle. Doctor Strange is an interesting character to follow with similar traits to Tony Stark, like I said, but with vast knowledge and the powers that he learns allows him to be one of the most important characters alongside Tony Stark in the final battles in the Avengers movies. And I think the fact that this film doesn't get the love or the forethought of hey, this was an important film to the MCU, because after you get your established early on films for the main team of the Avengers, a lot of the side movies, it really kind of depends how much people are interested in them, whether it be an Ant-Man, whether it be trying the first Guardians of the Galaxy or trying Doctor Strange, which, again, Doctor Strange has yet to have had its sequel, even though it is in the works. It's still the only one who right there didn't get its sequel right away. Incredible Hulk doesn't count because they can't make another film. but I feel that to just label this as it's kind of, but it's not there, and this is that. This film does so much correct and gets no play for it at all. This film has incredible visuals. This has really in-depth, I think, character development, where maybe you don't see that. I completely see that from how the character grows at the start of the film.
Okay, that's 2 minutes on your end, too.
And that's 2 minutes at the and there you go.
Well, I do want to say a couple things, and I guess we can just kind of this is the last remark. I do think that Strange is well developed. I just don't know, like I said, if the action side is. I do want to say this. Peyton Reed is the director of Ant-Man, obviously. And I think one of the things that this movie, and this has nothing to do with the argument, I just think it's interesting. Who we tapped to be the cinematographer, Russell Carpenter, is the same guy that made, or the same guy that captured Indian in the Cupboard, that 90s movie. Which, you know, I think just, it's not necessarily a boon for my argument. It's just kind of, Marvel has begun to take more, has begun to take bigger leaps in working towards hiring the right people throughout. It's hard when you make 20 movies, right? I think Doctor Strange had the right director on board. I just think that Marvel is doing a really good job of finding the right people to make their movies. But yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right, Adjudicator, Shane, your thoughts on the argument and who you would choose.
Okay, so after hearing both of your sides, and you both have made excellent points, I think at the end of the day I have to go personally with Ant-Man, just because I feel like a lot of what Ant-Man was, like, I think the odds were more stacked against it. Even in terms of the fact that, like, Doctor Strange had, like, a cool premise, like, innately, Ant-Man was about a guy who could shrink. And that was, like, a hard challenge to make an interesting, fun movie, and they totally did it. I'm also a little biased because I'm not a fan of Doctor Strange. I've kind of gone on the record before. I think I have issues with his story in terms of, I feel like he just walked up to monks, asked them to fix his hands, and they're like, well, don't touch that. And he's like, I'm going to touch it, and then I'm gonna be in charge.
He's predestined to, if you go back and, I mean, the Ancient One foresaw this all happening, so that's why he was alive.
Okay, yeah, I think it's all, I think he's an asshole, if I'm being honest. I'm not a fan of, I don't know. But that being said, I understand that I'm biased. I'm still going to have to go with Ant-Man, but you know what? This discussion made me reopen my Doctor Strange opinions, and I will go back and rewatch the film and see if I feel any differently.
Beautiful, Shane. I'm gonna just say a hearty thank you.
Of course.
I mean, Shane, that's Shane's opinion, but as you guys know, it's really up to you. As much as I'd love for you to vote for Ant-Man, I think Jordan's argument was great as well. I mean, I think he nailed a lot. I tried to give him a little bit more hassle than I think he was hoping for. But I don't disagree with a lot of what Jordan said either. I think either it could go either way. I think it's great that either of these movies are getting any discussion at all. I think they both deserve it. But now it's up to you guys. So as you guys know, you can go on Patreon. You guys have exclusive voting rights to the winner of Film Panic. So go on Patreon. You will see the vote. You can vote for me or Jordan. The winner will be announced in the next episode. The winner will be announced. I don't know what happened there. In the next episode of Film Panic. The standings, if you guys don't know, are real. There is going to be a champion at the end of the season of Film Panic. There will be a bracket of playoffs. For those of you who aren't sure who's going to be on the show yet, we have confirmed Carson Rundquist, who is an incredible, incredible content creator and a film student. He will be on as a competitor. Middle Eight, who makes just phenomenal, some of the best videos about music, but also happens to be a huge movie head on the internet. Check him out. Jordan will be here. Josh Weiss of he writes popular culture for Forbes. He will be here competing. There's another guest, another competitor for this season. We're hoping to round out. We've got to kind of close discussions on him in the next couple of days. But yeah, your vote really does matter. It changes the standings. It changes the brackets. And eventually, you will decide a champion. We think what we're going to do is the champion will have a certain amount of money donated to the charity of their choice this season. So it really does, you guys, it means a lot for you guys to vote. You know, I'd say maybe you should vote Shane's way. That's just my opinion, you know. Maybe give Ant-Man a little bit of love. You know, he's small. He could use it.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, Jordan. Yeah, anyways, a couple of housekeeping things. First off, Jordan, what are you doing right now on YouTube? What's going on?
I talk about movies that I watch and if I think they're good or not. And why? So
now,
it's a very,
Jordan,
very long
very
way of saying
articulate.
I mean, it's more of a discussion than like just an initial review. Like I don't structure them too. I just kind of just sit there and be like, here's my thoughts on the film. And
yeah, if you haven't seen Jordan's Electric Pop videos, I think they're done really well. They're kind of these. It's a more casual review than I think you get a lot of other places. They're really amazing videos. They're easy to binge. What are you talking about soon, Jordan?
Well, whatever's new that comes, I guess, to like a theater at home viewing, you know, that whole thing.
Scoob.
And then, yeah, stuff like Scoob, Sonic. By the time you listen to this, those are already up.
Did you see Scoob, Shane?
I did see Scoob, yeah.
I'm sorry.
What'd you think?
It well, is not a good movie.
I tried not to be as cynical as I was. I ended up being very cynical towards it. If it was too Hollywood.
It was bad.
That's my issue.
I just want to know where was the Scooby-Doo movie, because this had nothing to do with Scooby-Doo at all.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
So yeah, check Jordan's stuff out at Electric Pop. You can also find him at Jordan Fringe on Twitter. Shane, what about you? What do you got going on, man?
Oh, I make content over at the Roundtable, and then I have a Twitter at @JoshuaNemo, and I also make music, which you can all find through Twitter and stuff. But yeah,
which is how I found Shane, by the way. So yeah, Shane actually makes some dope music. I've been meaning to use it in a nostalgic video, but just haven't. It's been a nightmare right now with music and stuff. Even it's crazy on nostalgic. There are times where I'll use music. I'll go to the artist. I'll talk to the artist and a sound. So if they sample 3 seconds, 4 seconds of something, I'll get copyright claim. So I have to be really careful.
It's a brutal system. I totally understand.
It's not fun. Have you seen Sonic, by the way, Shane?
Oh yeah, no, I avoided that one. Not that I avoided it. I never got around to seeing it.
I watched that recently. I think we should talk about that on Panic Plus, Jordan.
That's a topic.
I think that's an interesting topic to talk about. Anyways, I am Tyler. You can find me at Nerdstalgic. If you're here, you probably already know that. You can find me on Twitter at NerdstalgicYT. It's there where we'll probably announce our future episodes, so follow there if you want to keep track of Film Panic and what's going on. For those of you that are hearing this 2 weeks late, you are listening to the iTunes version or Spotify version. If you want 2 week early access to the podcast and the voting rights, the exclusive voting rights, go to the Nerdstalgic Patreon. You get a ton of stuff. It's supporting this podcast. It's making this podcast possible. It's also supporting the equipment for this podcast. It's supporting the channel. Get access to an extra podcast, which is Panic Plus, which is a more traditional movie podcast that we do with a rotating third chair. With guests and whatnot. You also get access to The Cut, which is me and Jordan's commentary track. Yeah, that's it for Panic today. I have been Tyler. That's been Shane. Say hello. Bye, Shane. Or hi.
Thank you for listening.
And that's been Jordan. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.